From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the first day of July, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll recap yesterday's acreage and grain stocks numbers with the agricultural economist from the University of Illinois. They developed some new supply and demand tables for corn and soybeans. You'll want to hear those. And then as we finish out our program, we'll take a look at the weather forecast. Of course, today we'll talk with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day settled at $7.54.5. It was up 10.75 December at $6.07.5 on its settlement price. The new crop down 12.25 cents. July beans 49 cents lower, $16.26 the settlement price on this Friday afternoon going into the holiday weekend. In November, down 62.75 for the new crop soybeans at $13.95.25 a bushel. Bean meal futures down $10.20. The bean oil $4.25 lower. July wheat down 37.5 cents, settled at $8.31.25. The hard red there at $9.11, down 37.75 cents. Live cattle futures at $134.60, up $2.02.5. Feeders at $174.50, 90 cents higher, and lean hogs at $102.97.5, 87.5 cents higher. Crude oil up $2.78 a barrel at $108.53. Diesel fuel or heating oil 9.4 cents higher at $3.92.4 cents. The wholesale price of gasoline now at $3.70.1 cents. That's 16.5 cents higher. Natural gas at $5.69.2, up 2.6 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 30,902. That's about 117 points higher, and the S&P 500 up 13.5. Mike Zuzulo, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, is now here to discuss what was a really red day in the soybeans. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us. As we go into this holiday weekend, you would have thought, given yesterday's acreage numbers, particularly for soybeans, that there'd be strength there, but it started to fade yesterday, and it just folded. What happened?
I think you bring up a huge point, Todd. I think that if you look at the crop conditions report early in the week, the drought monitor late in the week, as far as the Thursday report that came out before the stocks and acreage numbers, and then the stocks and acreage numbers, you've got three supply heavy reports that, in my view, the market is pretty much discounted completely. Not so much the acreage report, but certainly the crop conditions dropping so precipitously in key states that surprised the trade, and then that being followed up with the drought monitor in the Midwest jumping 20 points and now equal to where we were last year at this time. And the fact that the weather market wasn't a consideration as we closed out the Friday trade, even though the GFS model got noticeably drier for areas like Champaign, Illinois. It just seems to me, when I put it all together, this is about the demand side, and this is about the recession, the dollar spiking higher, deflation, copper breaking hard. You know, it's interesting, the copper and the soft red wheat made their highs within 5 days or 6 days of one another. The copper making a high on March 11th and the soft red wheat on March 4th. Copper now down 30%, soft red wheat down 40%. This, to me, speaks of inflation dynamics and demand.
Well, so I do want to talk a little bit about the wheat market in context of all of this, because we have the March time frame, and then we turn around again and we have, a time frame in that mid-May, kind of a double top in the wheat market. Those usually, folks say, are made to be broken, but boy, it's been a $4 fall in the wheat market.
Yeah, it smells a lot like a 2008 market and a lot like a 2012 market, although I think it's premature when talking about 2012 to say that we've gotten through the worst as far as the crop potential production and the ability of a recovery. I actually think we're on our way more towards a 2012 market if we miss these rains next week, based upon clients in Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky, and and colleagues that we both have in northern Tennessee. So my mindset at this point, Todd, is that the soybeans could not handle the break in the wheat and the corn, that we had gotten to points and we had put enough premium in the soybeans that it needed the wheat and the corn to perform with it yesterday after the report. But going back to your double top, we had an inflation mindset-led rally coming out of 2020 and into 2021 when COVID broke, and the market saw China not breaking out and coming along with the rest of the world. And it just spelled, along with the Federal Reserve policy, buy the dollar, take the interest rates higher, take the bond yields higher. And I think after $9 trillion of losses in the stock market for the first half of the year, you probably just have some good old-fashioned margin calls that have to be cleaned up, whether it's equities or commodities.
And to do that before the holiday weekend doesn't seem like that odd of a thing. What happens next week?
Well, next week, I think we come back to the supply. Some of the major, you brought up the wheat double top, some of the major indices and longer-term charts to me suggested before Friday's trade, we could go down another 2 to 5%. Well, some commodities are almost there after Friday's trade. So we've got some major chart support on a couple key index charts. And if we miss the rains on the weekend and on Tuesday, Wednesday, and then we come back with super hot temperatures, I think we keep watching what the July corn and the cash corn does, because that's the one thing that you can walk away from if you're a producer and say, well, the cash didn't break, and the delivery process didn't put us into deliveries, into heavy deliveries. And that cash corn market is a dollar plus over the September contract, and over the basis is a dollar plus over in many, many areas right now. And so I think that's something we come back and look at after this weekend and see what the rainfall totals are.
The grain stocks numbers yesterday said farmers still have both corn and soybeans in the bin. Should they at this point?
I it's hard to say after this kind of a break. I don't think you need to press the sell button after this big of a break if you've got dry weather in Champaign, Illinois next week and 99-degree temperatures in Atchison, Kansas next week. I think that you can wait. But I do think that we have to understand this is a supply weather-led market, because the Federal Reserve has changed their policy. And at the very least, if you're going to store old crop corn and beans, get some puts underneath you in the new crop corn and beans, just so you have a floor underneath you. The key to this market to me is that the cash market stays relatively strong. It's the futures market and the investors that make these big breaks in prices, and I don't see that changing.
All right. So you said supply weather-led market, plus the Fed. I want to understand those two things. Supply and weather, I think I understand. Supply may have a different term here, though. The weather-led market is, if things don't turn around, we may have a weather-led market for new crop, that is, yet this summer. The Fed policies to hike the interest rates, try to slow the economy down, probably puts a lid on the top of the push higher. Is that what you're trying to tell me? I'm trying to understand where we're at.
You bet. You've got a situation. I think this is what I wrote to clients on Thursday night that kind of helps make it more clear. What's the biggest change or difference between the livestock market and the grain markets right now? Why are the livestock markets going higher and the grain market's going lower when the commodity indexes should be buying both, because they're both agriculture? To me, it's the export demand, and that's where the dollar comes into play. The dollar has not hurt the export demand for beef or pork. It has really hurt the wheat, the corn, and even the beans. We're below last year at this point on accumulated exports. I think the market has differentiated between that at this stage, and they're willing to buy the livestock market even with the strong dollar, because the demand's holding up so well on the export front. But they're not doing that from an export front with the dollar in the grains. And the Fed, back to your point, it's about investor demand. And that's why I say the Fed is using demand tools. The inflation we've created is more supply and weather and crude oil issues. And that's not, the Fed is only going to hurt the commodity demand more the higher they raise rates.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. You have a great holiday.
Happy Independence Day to you and all the great listeners at Will Radio.
Hey, thanks much. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with GlobalComResearch.com. Yesterday afternoon, I moderated a webinar with the agricultural economist Scott Irwin and Joe Jansen from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. They had developed new supply and demand tables based on the acreage and grain stocks figures. I'll let Joe Jansen bring you up to speed on what it really means to the marketplace, and then we'll give you some of the numbers.
Really, everything in the June 1 in those June 1 stocks numbers are kind of in line with trade expectations. It does imply pretty strong usage through the last quarter of the marketing year for corn and soybeans, but we think that that situation is justified, and so our forecast for feed and residual use for corn and really all other parts of the old crop balance sheet are largely unchanged. Maybe some decline in corn demand in the last quarter of the marketing year, but that's not really the big picture. The big surprise here was on the acreage side, 2.6 million fewer soybean acres than USDA projected in its March prospective plantings report. A little bit higher corn acres, which we thought was possible. We saw high corn prices through the planting period, and it really seems like U.S. farmers, to the extent that they could, really tried to make sure that corn acres got in the ground. And so we do see a slight increase in corn acreage in spite of declining corn acreage in the upper Midwest. That was sort of where the bulk of the big changes in these numbers were concentrated. Lower corn and soybean acres in North Dakota, Minnesota, South Dakota, likely caused by prevented plants and the excess moisture and late planting conditions that occurred in that part of the world. For the overall supply and demand picture, we see a continuation of tight grain and oilseed supply and demand balances. New crop supply and demand balance for soybeans remaining incredibly tight. Maybe some relaxation of that tightness on the corn side, given sort of potential demand headwinds related to exports and ethanol. That said, we remain in a much higher than average historical price period. We still see new crops corn futures at 625, new crop soybean futures in and around 1460. Those are very high price levels, but ones that imply very high price volatility, especially related to the weather news that we have in corn. I mean, we've seen this kind of situation move on a knife edge, really, through the last few weeks, and we don't anticipate that situation changes. The market's going to be incredibly sensitive to weather news going forward.
Again, that's Joe Jansen, agricultural economist from the University of Illinois. He and Scott Irwin made a presentation yesterday afternoon. That webinar, by the way, is up on our website right now. You can watch the full hour if you'd like at willag.org. In it, the two of them presented new, old, and new crop supply and demand tables for corn and soybeans in the United States. They did not make changes to the old crop soybean balance sheet after the USDA grain stocks and acreage numbers. However, they did make a single change in the corn balance sheet for the old crop. They dropped exports by 75 million bushels. That increased the ending stocks for this year to 1.56 billion bushels, up from the 1.485 that USDA had in its June WASD. No change in the season's average price because we're so close to the end of the year. $5.95 for corn is what WASD had in June. That's what Scott and Joe used for their old crop corn balance sheet season's average price. As well, $13.35 is the old crop soybean season's average price. Taking a look at some of the new crop numbers, they did make a series of changes, incorporating the updated acreage figure, which is now 89.9 million acres for corn. That's up from the 89.5 that was projected as of the March intentions report. They dropped yield for the year from 177, which is the trend line, to 176. Between those two things, it didn't really make that much of a difference in total supply. 15.97 was what USDA, billion bushels that is, was projecting in June. And the new numbers from Scott and Joe show 15.999 billion bushels. They did make some changes as well for the usage numbers. They dropped ethanol by 100 million bushels, and they dropped exports by 100 million bushels. And that makes the difference in total use, 200 million bushels. They put that back mostly into the ending stocks. USDA was using 1.4 in June, and Scott and Joe are at 1.629 billion bushels left over by the time we get to the fall of 2023 for a stocks-to-use ratio of 11.3%. And they dropped the season's average cash price for corn from $6.75, which is what USDA had in its June WASDE, to $6.25 for the supply and demand table developed by the University of Illinois. The new crop balance sheet incorporates, of course, the lower acreage figure for soybeans, now at 88.3 million bushels. That's down from the 91 that USDA had projected in the March planting intentions report. And in the end, as a bottom line, they took the old crop ending stocks from 280 million bushels in the June WASDE, this is for new crop soybeans, to a projected 198 million bushels for the University of Illinois supply and demand table. Stocks to use ratio drops to 4.4%, down from the 6.1% WASDE was using, or USDA. However, that did not make a change, thanks Joe and Scott, in the season's average cash price for the coming crop. Both remain at $14.70 for the June WASDE, the USDA number that's already in the marketplace, and the new S&D table from the University of Illinois. Eric Snodgrass is now here from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hi, Eric. Thanks for being with us. I hope you have a really great weekend weather forecast as we head into July the 4th.
Well, I mean, there just might be some natural fireworks. I think a lot of folks would like to see those because they typically bring some rain. And given what June gave us, I think a lot of us here in the Midwest, especially in the state of Illinois, like a couple more drinks on this crop before we start to move toward, you know, midsummer time period.
Well, let's start with what June gave us. What did the previous 2 weeks look like?
Yeah, you know, you look back at the last couple of weeks, and we just saw very large portions of the eastern Corn Belt, like most of Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, just bone dry and with high temperatures at times. Now, we got those really lucky rains, what was that, about a week, 10 days ago, that came through, and they just outperformed everything we could have hoped for. What was that? Maybe that was last Saturday that occurred. But then after that, you know, we've gone over drier, so we're needing more moisture than just that one shot that came through. But they're dry in the Mid-South, dry in the Southeast, and very dry in the Western Corn Belt, meaning this next 10-day forecast is going to be critical to that, because that dry Western Corn Belt also saw temperatures climbing back up toward 100 degrees middle of this week. And we'd need to just really get a good drink on this crop before we head into the most of it going into pollination.
Fireworks have two different ways to view that. What's the next 10 days look like?
Well, the good news is that the ridge that was over the Mid-South is moving over to the Southern Plains. And I say that's good news for us. It's terrible news for like Texas, Oklahoma, to Arkansas, that area. But if the ridge moves there, then we tend to get better flow out of the northwest at the jet stream level, and that tends to just deliver better chances for us seeing those storms that kind of run out of the northwest toward the southeast. And what they do is they just kind of work their way into the more humid and unstable air, and they tend to produce quite a bit of rainfall. And so we could see multiple rounds of that coming through in the next 10 days. But given our soil moisture issues at this point, we're going to need more than just a few rainfall events here in early July to kind of carry this crop forward, you know, because I still don't see the risk of being, you know, hotter and drier later in the month really taken off the table.
Oh, that's not good news. What does the summer look like in that case?
Well, this La Nina just continues to kick hard. I mean, the trade winds are just screaming. We've still got cold ocean temperatures where they've been cold for a while. But the only change has been that the Pacific Northwest and the Gulf of Alaska, that area has kind of warmed up a bit in terms of ocean temperature. So all that does is that tends to just help the ridge stay a little bit farther to the west. But if you're a Midwestern farmer, you want it on the West Coast, not in the high plains. That's too close for comfort. So because it's still going to be somewhere in the plains, we're going to run the risk of having more heat and more potential flash drought later. In fact, I just saw this morning the Climate Prediction Center did an update on their week two excessive heat risk, and they've now got us in the state of Illinois into the moderate risk category with the Mid-South there quite hot. So July, I just don't think we're out of the woods yet for worrying about this crop, given the what's going on in the Pacific, this La Nina, and where these ocean temperatures kind of correlate historically with drought risk in the midsection of the country.
So is the difference in where that high is positioned is ring of fire showers like we're thinking about?
Yeah.
And moving it further to the west means you really just open up the jet stream and you get regular rainfall?
Yeah, you want to be on the ring, not inside of it. That's just it. So if the ridge, you know, our best case scenario is if the ridge of high pressure sits over like Atlanta, or if it sits over, gosh, you know, the panhandles. So either side, doesn't matter. We just end up getting better thunderstorms. It's worst, I mean, it's the worst for us when it sits somewhere between like St. Louis or as far north as Minneapolis. That's when we're too close to the center of the high. We don't get any of the moisture. The storms are on the periphery. We're stuck in the middle. And that's how folks in Texas are going to feel for the next couple of weeks.
Does it matter how big or strong, and I don't know if those are two different things, the high is?
No, it does. But, you know, in summer, our pressure systems are weaker just because the temperature differences aren't as big as they are in winter. So we just have weaker pressure gradients. So in just generally speaking, the size of the high pressure cells we get, they would cover, you know, a region like the size of the Midwest. That's about their typical size, you know, this time of year. So, yeah, your question is spot on. And the answer is they do vary. But this summer, I think we're going to see them be pretty sizable, but more spread out than they can be in the winter.
I'm wondering, and I'm thinking about this just a little bit. So this is a really hard forecast to get for the summer, it sounds like.
Yeah, we're all struggling. And I think the reason why we're struggling is because each time the models are initialized, they're having a difficult time capturing the pattern across the North Atlantic and North Pacific. And that's because the flow is weak. So we see model run to model run variations that are really, really high. So if you look at your forecast today and you say, oh gosh, we might get an inch and a half. And then tomorrow you look at the forecast and you're down to a half inch. And then, you know, the next day it might go back up to 2 inches. And that's just because the storms are trying to be initiated on that ring and the models just can't do it very well. So probably the best thing to do is just to blend it all up and take a look at the average. And that's probably going to be closer than what any individual model run is going to give you. But I'll tell you this, the markets love to move on model run to model run changes. And if they go dry, we tend to see a positive price reaction this time of year. But if they go wet, boy, it can lose money quick.
Hey, thank you. Let's hope we don't lose money. Well, although we kind of hope we lose money. It depends on what side of the yield curve you're on.
Yes. I guess that's right. Yeah, it's a tricky one.
Hey, thanks, Bud. Yep. You have a great holiday weekend.
I will. You do the same.
That's Eric Snodgrass with Nutrien Ag Solutions in Dagerville. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. And there right now, in fact, you'll find our Commodity Week program. Many of these radio stations will carry it over the weekend. Our panelists this week included Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing, Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities, and Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what's happened in the world of agriculture. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.